Hello, welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Samuel Davies. In this episode, we speak with Michael Tutor, CEO of PumpAid. We speak about how PumpAid's work in Malawi has evolved to take the form of the delivery model best known among commercial retailers. We also talk about how they have changed their charity in order to accommodate this and why. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for business to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and book a free demo. So without further ado, here is Michael Tutor speaking about retailer models for charities. I'm delighted to be joined by Michael Tutor, CEO of PumpAid. Michael, welcome to Charity Chats.
Thank you.
Michael, maybe I think the first question for you really is each guest has a story on the podcast, and it's interesting for our audience to get to know you a little bit. So could you just maybe talk about your background and what's led you to become CEO of PumpAid?
Yeah, really quickly. I'm a chartered accountant by profession, and I'm a retailer by trade. And I spent most of my life working in the consumer sector with people like Gillette, Hertz, Burton's, and others. And I was genuinely planning my retirement when an opportunity to join PumpAid came up. And I saw that as a chance to use my commercial experience for social good. And just to quickly summarise that, charities, in particular water charities, have lifted an amazing number of people out of poverty in the last 20 to 30 years. But there are some pockets of poverty that are proving much, much harder to relieve than others. And I think there's much that the water sector can do from learning, can learn from the consumer goods sector, which has developed a range of delivery processes. Amazon can deliver your parcel to the most remote, furthest away customer. And the consumer sector has become very adept at reaching hard to reach people. The water sector is still operating the way they were operating 20 years ago, and they're finding it very difficult.
And I suppose, yeah, Amazon's kind of a large organization that's grown partly because I think I'm right in saying that customers kind of get what they're after, and it's available to them, and it's done very quickly. And I guess that's kind of what we're all aiming to do with the beneficiaries for our charities, aren't we?
And the key difference between Amazon and what would have been a traditional retailer 20 years ago is Amazon doesn't deliver its product. In the Aldi days, if you wanted a product, you had to, you know, go to a shop, you set in what you wanted. If you could take it home, you took it home. If you were buying a sofa, you go home and that sofa will be delivered to you by a delivery man working for the shop you bought your sofa from. Amazon doesn't have that model. My Amazon parcels are delivered by a lady in a car who probably lives a couple of streets from me. Because what Amazon has done, it's created a network of local delivery partners. So Amazon does the big warehouse stuff. It then disseminates it to a point in the delivery chain where it says, this is too local, we don't want to get involved, we're going to use a local partner. Too many of the larger water charities are still doing what they did 20 years ago. We do the delivery. We hire the staff, we come in like the cavalry over the hill, we install your water pumps, we do your... That's fine if you're working for a large population. The most popular water pump in Africa is the Afridev, especially designed by the World Bank for Africa. And it's the one you see in all the pictures, you know, the traditional hand pump. Depending on the terrain, costs anything between £4,000 and £9,000 to install. Depends how deep the well's got to be. And it, because it's a huge, great piece of machinery, it's very heavy and it requires specialist materials get it into place and fix it. And it also requires quite a bit of specialism to maintain it. Therefore, it has to have a population of somewhere between 350 and 500 people to make it worthwhile. Otherwise, the cost per beneficiary is just out of the question. The problem for some parts of the world, and Malawi, where PumpAid works, is one of them, is 83% of Malawi's population lives in small and remote communities. Wow. Some as small as 30, 40 people. The big pump, big company, big delivery model doesn't work for 40 people because it's just not cost effective. And they're the people that were getting left behind.
Is it a case of kind of capacity building? Is that a big part of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, we're almost using the Amazon model in that we train up local mechanics to install and maintain local pumps. And interestingly, the most common form of transport in Malawi is the bicycle, because that's how people get about. And therefore, Malawi is awash with bicycle shops and bicycles. And you know, bicycles that, in fact, they do a lot of recycling. There are organizations that take bicycles that we've got fed up with in Europe, and they take them to Africa because they can still make them work.
Nice.
And the mechanics of a bicycle and the mechanics of a water pump are not that dissimilar. It's all cogs and springs and things that go up and down and round. And so it's not that difficult to train a bicycle mechanic into being a pump mechanic because you've already got the basic skills. And so what we do is, rather than send our own cavalry in, we upskill the local community and, in fact, encourage these, we call them entrepreneurs because that sounds good, to actually set up businesses to charge money. Because one of the other problems that the traditional model of aid has got is it's all free. And that has two, I think, quite serious consequences. The first, if people are getting depending on stuff for free, there's no freedom in that. There's no agency. I'm not a free man. I'm Patrick McGowan in The Prisoner. I'm completely dependent on somebody else. That's a shit lifestyle. But more importantly, if you're given something for free, there's nothing you can do about it if it doesn't meet your needs, because you've got it for free anyway. And one of the problems of water in sub-Saharan Africa is, on any given day of the week, 40% of the water pumps won't be working. And they won't be working because they're not maintained properly. The getting spare parts is difficult. Even if you could get the spare parts, finding someone who knows how to fit them is difficult. And we don't just know that. We accept that. The international go-to place for water statistics in the world is the Joint Monitoring Panel of the World Health Organization and UNICEF, JMP for short. And JMP are the people who keep reporting back to the United Nations to tell people how many people in the world don't have water. Yeah, currently it's 750 million, something on those lines. But that's not how many people don't have water. That's how many people don't have access to a pump. Because JMP have a very interesting definition of access to water. Their definition of access to water is access to a water pump that works 4 days in seven.
That's interesting.
It's worth looking it up. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had a toaster that only worked 4 days in seven, I'd get another toaster. We're expecting people to put their lives on the line. Water is life. And we're saying, as long as you've got access to water 4 days out of seven, what are you worried about? I think that's immoral, verging on the obscene. And the reason why we accept that as a sector is because our delivery model is such that we can't keep those pumps working all the time because they're too complicated, getting the parts too difficult, there's not enough people, blah, 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 blah. And so Pump Aid's approach is the antithesis of this. We say, no, it is possible to get those pumps working, but not on your delivery model.
Right.
Our delivery model is upskilling the local community. Our delivery model is to create businesses that only financially survive if they do a good service. So our entrepreneurs, we train them for free. We support them free. We do a huge amount of promotion, advertising. We link them to district water offices who in Malawi have the responsibility for access to water, but no money to deliver it. But they have to run a business. They charge communities for mending their pumps. And what we encourage communities to do is not to pay when a pump breaks, but to take out a service agreement. You take out a service agreement, and now this man or woman, because we've actually got quite a few women doing this, will come every 3 months and give your pump the once over.
Mm-hmm.
The most common fault with an AfroDev pump is the centering ring, which essentially is just a little ring. And if you can imagine it, the handle goes up and down and the pump goes in and out. The centering ring keeps the thing that goes up and down, I can't remember what it was called, but keeps it in the center. That's why it's called a centering ring. And as long as it's in the center, that's fine. But the centering wing wears inevitably because there's a pump going up and down all the time. Some of these pumps, some of these water points, the well could be anything, 30, 35 meters deep. You only need to be a millimeter out at the top to weigh a colossal amount out at the bottom. And if you're out at the bottom, what actually happens is then it jams. When it jams, the whole thing has to be dismantled. Now, we can replace one of those rings for a couple of dollars. Replacing the pump could cost you £2,500.
Wow.
And so what we try to get the communities to see is by paying this person to service your pump on a regular basis, he'll repair all the little cheap bits. And it's a bit like a car. You know, if you get a knocking noise from your engine and you ignore it, in a couple of months' time, your gearbox is going to seize up. Whereas if you sorted it when you had the knocking noise, you'd... Anyway, this is a very, very long story to say that what we do is we pinch ideas from commerce. Amazon is reaching hard-to-reach populations by actually using the local population. And that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We also create a virtuous circle because now this is transactional. People are paying money, not a lot. The average service charge in Malawi is about 20,000 kwacha, about 20 quid. 20 quid doesn't cover the cost. The cost is at least 30 quid. So we top up with an extra 10 quid, and we have funders who are very happy to do the top-up arrangement. Mm. But there's a transaction. So now the community with that water point isn't a beneficiary anymore. They're now a customer. And customers have rights. Customers have entitlements. I don't care whether I'm paying you full cost recovery or not for what your service is. I gave you my money. Now, if my pump breaks, I'm perfectly entitled to complain because I'm paying for a service. And so what you're doing, you're creating within the entrepreneurs a financially sustainable business. You can make money out of this, Sunshine. You know, do a good job, they'll call you back.
Mm-hmm.
Not only will they call you back, they'll recommend you to the next village up the road. And word of mouth is incredibly powerful in Southern Africa. And so we have lots of entrepreneurs. If I met one of my entrepreneurs when I was out, who said, the standard question is always, how's it going? And he said, oh, Michael, it's going so fabulously, I've had to stop advertising. Why have you stopped advertising? He said, because I've got so much work, I can't take on any more business. And I said, I don't know how good you are at pumps, but I can tell you're a fabulous salesman. I think you should stop maintaining pumps and hire someone to do it for you. You're the salesman. If you've got more business than you can cope with, hire somebody. This is it. This is how you make money. This is how you make yourself richer. And what we're doing, we're changing. And when you live in a country where 54% of Malawi's GDP is foreign aid, it's that dependent. Wow. When you grow up in that society, you just think, life may get marginally better, but that's all it's going to give you. And what we're trying to do is to sow this seed and say, no, you're running a successful business. Hire people, employ staff, grow your business. Who knows? At some point you'll be selling it to some rich Russian oligarch. I don't know. But it's getting people to see that you don't have to be dependent. You can be in control of your own destiny. And so it's getting our entrepreneurs to see there is money to be made here, good money in Malawi terms. I can make myself better. I can make my family better. The communities to see no longer are you a put up and shut up. No, you're not a beneficiary. You're a customer. You know us. If you don't get the service you want, complain about it. You're entitled to do that. In Malawi, everything you needed to do what we're doing existed. The district water offices, which are organized by the government, they've got access to water targets. But they have no money to deliver them. There are talented people in the communities, these bicycle repairmen, who could be improving access to water, but they had no motivation to do it. There's no money in it. And you had communities desperate for water, but didn't have the means to get it. And so what we've done is we've created a virtuous circle where we, as the ringmaster, for want of a better word, we sign a license agreement with the district water office for a minimum, for a set number of pumps, name pumps, ideally somewhere around 200. Because we know that if you take a pot of pumps, some of them could be repaired for literally a few dollars. Some of them will cost you thousands of dollars. And the majority will be somewhere in the middle. If I take 200 pumps, I can average that cost. I can say to my funders, I can repair every pump in Malawi for $50.
Right.
And a funder will fund that. And I know some of those pumps I'm going to repair for significantly less than $50. Some of them will be more than $50, but it will average out. And I need exclusivity to make that work, because what I can't have is Water Aid, Charity Water, and all the others coming in and doing the cheap repairs and leaving me with all the expensive ones. That business model doesn't work. So the starting point is District Water Office exclusivity. No other organization is going to touch these named pumps. Once we've got that, we then go to the community and say, we've now got exclusivity. Here's a service contract. Sign up to the service contract. We will guarantee 93% functionality for your water pump in a country where 60% is considered a good idea. Now, we'll do 93%. Can't do 100% because we know things bust, things go wrong. It takes time. Our entrepreneurs are on a 72%, a 72-hour response time. So if your pump breaks, 72 hours will be fixed. No sweat. But in fact, your pump isn't going to break, because if you take a service contract, your pump will get a service every 3 months. So it won't break anything. So we sell that contract to the community. And then we go to entrepreneurs and we say, we will train you. We'll provide you all the support. We buy the parts in bulk and then we sell them to the entrepreneurs. So we get the benefit of bulk purchase. They're buying considerably cheaper than they could buy on the open market. And the deal for the entrepreneur is they have to sign up to our service levels. So we have a service level agreement which does say, you know, within 24 hours of us contacting you, you will come back to us. So we'll say, we've had a call from the other, we need a 24-hour call back. We need a 72-hour response time. Within 3 days, you're physically on site. So we tie everything together contractually. And then once you've completed that circle, suddenly the district water office can see access to water in its district going up. It's hitting its targets. The community now have a pump that either doesn't break at all, or if it does break, it's fixed really quickly. So they have no trouble raising money from the users of this pump. Because they say to the users, look, if we buy one of these, it's fabulous.
Mm.
So they have no trouble generating the money. The entrepreneur now can afford to focus on this business because once you've got service contracts, you've got guaranteed income. You know that money's coming in, plonker, plonker, plonker. And then finally, you've got regulation because the district water office, the contract we've got with the district water office is the one that says 93% functionality. And so if a community isn't getting the service that we've said they were, if our entrepreneur is not providing service, they can complain to the district water office and the district water office can complain to us.
What happens then, Michael? Do you, if you get a complaint, are you then presumably following up with the entrepreneur? And potentially, worst case scenario, they'll lose their contract with you.
They lose the contract and we'll give it to somebody else. Mm. I do sound ever so much like an evil money grabbing capitalist, and I have serious trouble at some charity meetings I go to. Because I get angry when people say things like, oh no, but you can't charge people money for water, Michael. Water is a human right. No, water is not a human right. Water is a product that people need, and they need it a lot more consistently than 4 days out of seven.
I mean, I can understand. I mean, it sounds like a wonderful setup to me, and I can understand the benefits. I can also understand, as I'm sure our listeners would be able to, the types of complaints or challenges, probably a better word, that you would get to that model in terms of asking people who don't have very much money, that's the assumption anyway, to pay for water when they could get it for free. Obviously, you kind of explain why that doesn't work and why this kind of method is a better one. In terms of presumably part of that kind of the business model that you've come to with PumpAid has looked at those types of things anyway, the financial aspects of it, which is why you subsidize it, right?
Yeah, well, and also too, that's why we've created, because part of the reason for this conversation is why do you create a social enterprise? Is we started doing this just with PumpAid.
Mm-hmm.
And we had two issues. First, the word aid in the title. There are a lot of dishonest people in Africa, frankly. There are a lot of dishonest people in every country of the world. And when our entrepreneurs were asking people to pay money to an organization that had the word aid in its title, there was a presumption that our entrepreneurs had got this for free. Mm. They were now trying to charge someone for it. There was this no construct of people don't give charities money. Not in Africa. Charities give you money. And so there was an initial reluctance. There was a suspicion. You know, we think you're pulling a fast one. We think you're doing a thing, which was a bit of an issue. But also, we know there are some communities who are so poor that they will never be able to pay for their water. Just like there are people in Britain who are on benefits. That, you know, in every country, not everybody can earn £1 million a year, like Mr. Halpin. And so, to resolve both those two things, we thought we needed two different organizations.
Right.
We needed a social enterprise that would apply all those commercial principles to us. And, you know, What's interesting, when you go to Malawi, which is incredibly poor, 10th poorest country in the world, according to the UN International Deprivation Index. Despite Malawi being the 10th poorest country in the world, I've almost not seen anybody without a mobile phone.
Really?
Because what mobile phones have done to Africa is just incredible. A bit of a sidetrack. But if you remember, we started off with smoke signals. In Britain, you know, we used to have those big beacons. When the Armada's coming, we'll light a fire on top of a stick, and then someone else will light a fire on top of a stick, and someone else will light a fire on top of a stick, and suddenly we know the Spanish have invaded. That's handy. Not as convenient as it might have been. And then we had people on horses. We had the first Royal Mail was in a coach. And then we came up with, semaphore, flags. Then we convinced, this is a long anecdote, but trust me, I'm going to get there in a minute. We went from semaphore to Morse code. Finally, we came up with telephone lines, and we had telephones that go, zzz, and as long as you're on a cable, you've got a phone. Then I can still remember the original car phones that were the size of a house brick. I mean, you know, the first mobile phones were just colossal. Yeah. Now I've got a thing on my desk with the processing power 10 times the size of the Saturn V rocket that put men on the moon.
Wow.
And what Africa has done is saying, that's handy. Forget all the this and the that and the last. Malawi's gone from having no telephone system whatsoever to everybody having a mobile phone, because you don't need cables with mobile phones. So what's happened in Malawi is suddenly people can communicate, and phones are really, really powerful, because, you know, it now means if you're a farmer growing tobacco, which is a large percentage of Malawi's crop, you used to take your tobacco to an aggregator, and the aggregator would give you what they fancied. Now you can phone up half a dozen aggregators and get a price on the phone. And you can play one off against the other. Mm. And then when you find the one giving you the highest price, you say, right, I'm going to come to you. So the telephone has been really empowering. So even really poor people in Malawi have telephones. That's what I'm going to say.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And what that demonstrates is, if you want something, you'll find the money to pay for it. Even if you're poor, you'll find the money. And what we're doing with really poor communities is saying, you really do want water, don't you? Yeah, I do. Here's a way to get it. You can either wait for the next 20 years for some big charity to have finished all the £450,000 conurbations, the 250 people, the 150 people. Oh, well, here we are. Now we're down to 35. It's you. You can wait 20 years for that, or you can have it tomorrow. But it'll cost you. And so what we've developed is these two streams, where Beyond Water operates on a commercial basis with people who have money, and PumpAid still provides water for free to people who don't.
Nice.
And so we're able to offer that hybrid approach, so that the really poor communities will still, and one of our PumpAid's big programs is putting water into nursery schools. There are about 9,500 preschools in Malawi. They were set up by the Malawi government, and they do for children under five. Unfortunately, the government has very little money, so they're run by volunteers in very decrepit premises, and less than 90% of them have a toilet. I don't know if you have any small children in your house, but I can tell you, small children go to the toilet almost continuously. I think it's second only to runny noses. I think runny noses,
oh, yeah,
are,
absolutely.
Runny noses are continuous. Going to the toilet comes a really close second. And yet these schools don't have any toilets and no access to clean water either. So we have a program which is funded by a variety of funders, International Rotary, really like it, where we install water points and toilets into these little nurseries. Now, there's no way. This is run by volunteers. They haven't got any money. So they get that for free. And that's entirely charitable. And that's not. On the other hand, if we're talking to a farming community and we can see how much that community is raising, And we can see they've all got mobile phones and they've all got bicycles. No, you're not going to get it for free. And you're not going to get it free because I'm an evil money-grabbing capitalist. You're not going to get it for free because I want to put the power back in your hands. Mm. I want you to know that you don't have to be dependent. You've got a choice. And that's the other thing. I'm not a great fan of Amazon for a number of reasons, but one of the other things that Amazon is really good at, as well as delivery, it's choice. Because lots and lots of different people supply exactly the same product on Amazon. And you can pick which one of them you want to get your product from. And I'm hoping to develop exactly that same thing. At the moment, we're under capacity, so there's no real competition. But I, my dream is we'll actually have competition in this market. There'll be really, really good mechanics, average mechanics. Actually, by market forces, the really good ones, their businesses will get bigger and thrive, and the really bad ones will struggle. And because I don't want everyone to go out of business, I want the successful ones to recruit the not so successful ones. And so I've got one of the programs, which is funded by the Medical Foundation, which is a big Liechtenstein foundation. They're funding a lead mechanic program where we're taking some of our best performing in a practical sense, really good technically, mechanics. And we're sending them on a business training course, how to run a business, how to do a cash flow, how to employ staff, what HR, legal, because these are the people who I genuinely think are the businessmen of the future in Africa. And what I want them to do is their businesses to grow and our mechanics that are acceptable, because if you're not acceptable, you're not on the books, but not high flyers. Well, they could be subcontractors to our really successful ones. So the really successful ones are driving the business, and they're now not only increasing access to water, they're creating employment. They're just, and none of that is deliverable under a charity banner, because you get, I'm sure charities aren't allowed to put restricted funds at risk. There's a whole lot of limitations in charity law about how commercial a charity can behave. There are no limitations in law about what a social enterprise can do. And so by developing these two delivery structures, we've got our core charity that is still delivering access to water to people who otherwise wouldn't have it. But we're slowly, and when we first started, golly, Beyond Water was 10% of our operation. It's now close to 70%. And it's got legs. It's working, and you can see it's working because it's growing, and it's only growing because more and more people want to do it. It's only growing. We now have MPs in Malawi saying, "I've talked to some other MPs, and you're doing this in this constituency. I want you to do it in my constituency." And next thing is, and how much are you going to pay towards that? Because they've all got money, and in the oldie days, someone would have given it to them for nothing. But Beyond Water doesn't do stuff for nothing. As I said before, it's not full cost recovery. We've got some really, really loyal funders who like what we do because it's different and who know that in the 10th poorest country in the world, you can't run a profitable business. That's not going to happen. But they're prepared to subsidize the gap between what you can sell and what it costs to deliver. And so Beyond Water is just growing. And in fact, first week of April in Malawi, the Ministry of Water is hosting a seminar on increasing access to water. And we are doing a presentation. And the Ministry of Water want us to tell others what we're doing.
Michael Chuta, thank you for contributing to Charity Chats.
And thank you so much for letting me talk uninterrupted for so long. I do hope some of it's been interesting.
Big thank you to Michael Chuta for sharing his insights and expertise with us here on Charity Chat.
The success of Amazon and other large retailers should not be ignored by charities looking at how they can best solve the needs of their beneficiaries. In this episode, Michael talked about how the models for delivery of products and how this has fundamentally changed among retailers in recent history, and some charities may well benefit from taking note and adapting their delivery models as Pump Aid has. In the context of water pumps, Michael made a compelling case for charging some beneficiaries and developing a commercial industry among local people, for local people, which sees those in need of water having their payment for water subsidised by the charity. The benefits of this model were spelled out by Michael, and it sounds like this is certainly improving the water accessibility of many people in Malawi. For many charities, the idea of charging beneficiaries for services that they provide seems to run counter to their mission. But in these particularly difficult, challenging times for charities and the people they seek to support, a subsidised model of support, or one that lends itself to embracing some form of commercial basis, is certainly worth considering for some. Michael talked about the presumptions that come with the word aid and the hurdle this posed within the communities in which his charity works. For Pump Aid, setting up a social enterprise was a helpful tool to a hybrid approach to providing water in Malawi. This sounds like it's also made for a more compelling proposition to the charity's funders, as well as those providing subsidies to their social enterprise model. In our society right now, many of us will have views around the effectiveness of governments, the greed of markets, and the shortfalls caused by both for the people our charities exist to support. But speaking with Michael, it occurred to me that rather than seeking to address the imbalances in our society and provide a counterweight to the greed and ineptitude of big business and government, the charity sector should also be seeking to take a larger market share, to lead society more than we are already, perhaps by taking from other forms of business and other models of business, and we can start to then do that better and address the inequalities that keep us hungry to change things. So thank you, dear listener, for getting this far with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to enjoy the podcast. We'd love to hear either way. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, plus share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested in what we do. It's just left for me to thank our corporate sponsors. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and book a free demo. Also like to thank Giant Squid Audio Lab for sponsoring our podcast kit, Magda Axsmith for our beautiful website. Check it out at charitychat.org.uk. And of course, Forest of Fools for playing throughout the show and for playing us out right now. That's it from me. Keep on doing what you can. Speak to you soon. Cheerio. Bye-bye.